Welcome to Happily Family. I'm Cecilia
And
Hilke,
I'm Jason Hilke.
and we are delighted today to have Dr. Kirsten Varchio with us. Kirsten is a clinical psychologist who's worked with teenagers and their families for the past 25 years. She developed the Calm Connection Program and other online resources to help parents of teens because she watched so many great parents unknowingly make mistakes because they didn't get the support they needed. As a researcher who's conducted studies on teen bullying and aggression, lying, delinquent behavior, and resilience, Kirsten wants parents to have access to strategies that are based on scientific and psychological research, along with practical support and guidance. Welcome, Kirsten. It's great to have
Thank you for
you.
being here, Kirsten.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to start by asking you about the experience that a lot of parents of teens might be having with they're dealing with slammed doors or eye rolls or just moodiness. And it seems like the three choices, none of which are great, is either consequences and punishments, which don't really work, or just ignore it. Or we can just wait until they're 25. So what's going on with our teens? Why is it so hard to be around them?
Yeah, the teen years are really tough. And you speak to any parent of a teenager and they've had an eye roll, a moodiness, some kind of refusal over pick up your shoes or unpack a dishwasher, or a slam door in their face, or a parent who's worried about their kid always being behind closed doors. And you're right, parents often respond with, well, I feel like maybe that's behavior that's disrespectful, and they try and discipline it, and all of a sudden that doesn't work as well as it did when they were young, when the kids were younger. And parents start to feel like things are getting out of control, and maybe sort of if I just discipline it some more, or if I threaten to take off their phone, or I put in more boundaries, then things will work. And there's no judgment there. There's all good reasons why you're trying those things. Maybe they worked when your children were younger, but all of a sudden it stops working in the teenage years and tends to make it a lot worse. And then you have, that the other end of the spectrum of parents who are going, well, I've learned a little bit about teenage brain development, and their frontal lobes aren't developed, and they're going to be impulsive, or maybe they just need to disconnect from their parents to develop their independence. And then they kind of pull right back and go, I'll just wait until they're 25 when they stop doing it. And that really is, that's probably the most concerning narrative that I'm most concerned about in society at the moment, is this idea that we need to just kind of pull back. And it's concerning to me because in my undergraduate psychology degree, in essence, I was taught a little bit of that in my university degree. This idea of teenagers need to almost disconnect from their parents. We don't use those words, but develop independence. They're going to push you away. Maybe you need to get an auntie or a close family friend to be their confidant now, because they're not going to talk to you, all of those things. And it's actually really untrue, and it's really quite unhelpful, that narrative, because while the role of friends becomes much more important in the teenage years, what the research shows is that the role of parents continues to be a really important key part of adolescent resilience. And so if we kind of look at, like, well, what is going on with the eye rolls and the moodiness? Why are they doing it? That was your question, which is a good question to start with. Well, in the teenage years, there's so many, what we now know, so many brain changes happening. So we've always kind of pointed the finger at hormones, and of course hormones are causing a lot of things to go on. There's a lot of brain changes going on in teenagers in those years, which leads to much bigger feelings in the teenage years than periods before that and periods after that. Teenagers do in fact feel their feelings much bigger than we do as adults, and much bigger than they did when they were children. And often these eye rolls, the moodiness, the refusal, and the closed doors, they're actually a sign, they're behaviors that go with some of those big feelings. We're also living in a time, so you might go, yeah, well, that's always been adolescent development. I went through that too, and I wasn't this rude to my parents. I think it's also important to know that we're also going through a time in history where teenagers are under so much more stress than they ever have been before. That we've seen an increase in mental health difficulties, which then flows on to our kids, whether your child has a mental health diagnosis or not. They're friends with someone who does. And that impacts their whole life. It impacts when they're sitting in the classroom and a kid struggles to control their impulses in the classroom. The teacher is struggling to manage that. There's more stress in the life because of that. There's more stress in their life when their friends are telling them really quite serious mental health concerns. That we never had to deal, most of us did not have to deal with that. Whereas now most teenagers do have to deal with that. And I know that the finger gets pointed a lot towards social media and devices and everything as the driver of all of this. I'm not saying it's not, I'm saying we don't have the answer. But what I am saying is social media is often the symptom and a coping mechanism for all of these emotions going on. And really the true kind of solution that I see, or one of the solutions for this generation of teenagers, they need a lot of comfort. And as parents, we're ideally positioned to be that comfort and that place to help them to learn about their emotions and to regulate their emotions and to co-regulate their emotions. So we really don't want to be ignoring the eye roll, the moodiness, the refusal, and the closed door. Because it's a symptom of a much bigger thing going on for them. Teenagers need our help to help them to regulate their emotions. They don't need us to ignore it, and they certainly won't respond well if we discipline that. So I have a little bit of an example to help parents to understand what I mean. Is that okay if I throw that
Go
in
for it.
now?
Sure.
Just yeah. So, some parents still listen to that and go, yeah, but my kid's the exception to the rule, which is fine. Like maybe your kid is. Sometimes kids are just rude and you can say, stop being rude, and they stop. And if that works for you, then good. But if it's not, then these are the parents that I'm talking to. So let's imagine that I've had a really stressful day at work, right? In my work, I listen to lots of really heavy stories from parents sometimes, and lots of struggles from parents that they're going through. And I'm feeling the stress of my work day of listening to all of those things. And I'm feeling tired. It's cold outside. I'm walking in the door. I haven't thought about what I need to cook for dinner. I'm feeling a bit stressed about that. And on top of that, there's other things going on with like friends and parents and things like that. That's the load of the parent walking in the door, right? And I walk in the door and I turn around and I see that no one has packed the dishwasher. And I look around the family and I'm like, where are they all? And they're all locked behind closed doors, scrolling on their phones, right? None of them are doing their homework. No one is to be seen. And then I'm like taking my deep breaths because someone's told me I should take my breaths before I react. It's good advice. And then I realized that the dog's vomited out the back, and then I take another step forward, I trip over a shoe and I kick my toe, right? I am then going to lose it because the stress has built up. And I'm then like yelling and screaming, and all I want to do, I do not want to make dinner. I just want to go to my room in a quiet place on my own. And what I need in that moment is I don't need my family to then say, that's really rude, disrespectful behavior. You should really not talk to us all that way. What's wrong with you? All I need in that moment is someone to just say, whoa, seems like you've had a really hard day. Don't worry. Just go take your time, you need it. Now, when we think about what our teenagers are walking in the door with, where they're like, so and so looked at me, I went to my locker this morning and none of my friends said hello. And then so I found out from someone that maybe someone spread a rumor behind my back. And then I went into math class and found out that I have no idea what's going on. And I'm expected to produce this like massive artwork by the end of the week that's way beyond the standard of any of us. Oh, and then in English, I went in and they expect me to write an essay that's the standard of like some Harvard scholar. And my creative writing piece also has to have all this wonderful descriptive language. It's no wonder there's sometimes when our teenagers just want to close themselves off in their room and just go, I just can't, I can't do the dishwasher right now, Mum. In the same way that when we've had a really big day, I'm like, I just can't cook dinner right now, right? So I think once parents kind of get that idea, they hopefully you start to see that in that moment, disciplining the eye rolls or refusing to do the dishwasher or that rude tone of voice, not what your teenager needs at all. And ignoring it also not at all, you know, no one wants to be ignored when they've had a hard day either.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's wow. So I thought you had a camera in our house, first of all, the way you described all that. I like the way that you put those together so that we as an adult start to see how our experiences that are big to us can feel that, therefore the teens' experiences can feel big to them. Because it's, I think, you know, as an adult, sometimes looking at like it's just a test or it's just your friends talking behind your back. Like we don't put ourselves in their shoes. So I think that's, I really like the empathy that kind of evolves out of what you just went through there. And I really appreciated you were talking about how our teens are, they have a lot more going on than really our generation had, I would say. I mean, each generation has, you know, it feels like, you know, new things going that the previous generation didn't. But I do believe that this generation really has significantly more that they're dealing with. And so I can imagine that whole scenario you just described there, and the struggle I have or I have had, and I hear the parents struggle with is like, yeah, I want to be there for my kiddo. They're behind a door, or they just walked in and, you
Or
know,
they slammed
slammed
the
the door,
door.
right? And threw their books down. And I want to be there for them, but they have no interest at all in talking to me. They don't want me to comfort them. They don't want to talk to me. They don't want me to give them empathy. They are not interested in me at all. I know that's what I should be doing. I know I want to be connecting with them, but like my teen's just not interested in doing that. How do we as parents connect with our teens when our teens, I won't say refuse, but like the signals we're getting are that they don't really want to talk to us. They don't want to be associated with us. They just happen to live in our house.
And that's the, you know, that's the next question I always get as well is, you know, is my teenager won't talk to me. And part of it is like part of the reason why we're talking about the eye rolls, the moodiness, the refusal over the dishwasher and the slammed door is that's the way that your teenager is communicating with you. So we have to kind of, so some of what you're saying there is a timing issue, right? Is that we can be in the perfect moment of parenting calm, ready to go in and rescue our children from all of their emotional difficulties. And they're in a play headspace, or they're in a headspace where they're seeking support from a friend, or they're just trying to get their math homework done. And where, so there's a timing issue there. If they're behind their closed door, often they're kind of going, this is not the time I want to talk right now. So often it's actually learning to talk teenager and to really lean into the times when they are talking to you, even if those times are really hard for you to listen to. So there's two examples of hard things to listen to. One is when your teenager's nattering on about something that you have zero interest in, and you're like, I just want to get to that part where I get to emotion coach you because I feel like, you know, I've listened to this presentation and, you know, you're such a vulnerable teenager. Can we skip through the bit where you tell me the funny story about someone taking a video or like just something really ridiculous, right? But we need to build goodwill in our relationship with them, and actually really just part of it is connecting with them where they're at when they're there. So if they come home and they want to talk about the movie or the skateboard or whatever, the music that they're listening to or whatever it is, whatever irrelevant thing it is, open that conversation up on the the thing that feels super irrelevant to you, because it's actually not irrelevant at all. One, you're building relationship equity. You're showing your teenager that you care about what they care about and that you know how to listen without giving advice, without jumping in, without interrupting, all of those things. So you're building relationship equity for the harder conversations, but you're also building up your teenager's sense of self and identity, which is a wonderful resilience building thing. It's actually quite tough to identify what it is that you like and don't like in your opinions about things, and to say that out loud to someone else. So if you have a teenager that is willing to share with you all of their love of whatever YouTube video they watched or movie or something like that, that's part of helping them with their identity development. And you need to switch off that part of your brain that's going, but where did you watch it and who did you watch it with and all the danger kind of did you take, were you part of that video at school, whatever it is, and just connect with their world a little bit. So that's one area that they come to us with and maybe we miss because we're too wanting to get on to the topic that we think is the more important one. And sometimes also what happens is they download all of that. They see that they've got our full attention and then they move on into the next thing. So like I still work a tiny bit with teenagers in my clinical practice. I have done that a lot in the past. I've moved much more towards working with parents. But when I work with a teenager in clinical practice, first thing I start with is what TV they're watching, what movie they're watching. It's what we call in therapy rapport building. It warms people up, right? It's good. It's what we like in conversation. Think about it as an adult. If you're wanting, the good interactions that you have with your friends, first of all, you start off with a really light, how is the weather? And then maybe you move into a topic of like kind of interest that you commonly hold. And if they kind of show you the right type of interaction there, then you might go to something that's a bit more deep. So we've got to give our teenagers that time. But I also want to acknowledge that there are some teenagers that don't give that to parents either. There are legitimately some teenagers that are fully closed behind closed doors. And the only things they say to you is they come out of their bedroom and maybe they lift their middle finger at you and they tell you to F off, right? Like there's some families that are really struggling with that and going, well, what am I meant to do with that? That is really rude. There might be some vulnerability there, and I'm trying to take it to the vulnerability that I can't. And what I suggest that you do in those situations is that you actually lean into their experience rather than into your defensiveness, which is really hard to do. But when your teenager is, if they're constantly coming out and expressing anger to you, there's something in your relationship that needs to be addressed. And the best way of addressing it is to go, I can see you're really angry with me. You want to tell me more about that. And that's the opposite of what most parents do. It's really hard to invite your teenager to tell you all the things that you are doing wrong as a parent. But when we do that, we have an opportunity for repair. When we let go of that part that says, my job is to teach my kid respect, and see our job as our job is to truly discipline means to teach. And to teach means all the things about emotions. Part of emotions is naming emotions, expressing emotions, understanding relationships, being able to express your anger in a relationship and have someone reframe that for you. All of those things, you get all those opportunities when the teenager says, well, I hate it because you just don't understand. You're like, yeah, tell me more about it. Often the things they yell at us, like, it's a little bit scary to say this, but often things they yell at us are true, right? They get frustrated. You don't understand. I probably don't because I've jumped in too quickly with advice. I really don't because I haven't grown up in their generation. You never listen to me. You're always trying to fix. You make me feel like, rah, rah, rah. So it's worth listening to those things because those things will be your cue of what you need to work on in the relationship domain from your end. It doesn't mean that we stay in that cycle of teenagers constantly swearing at us and everything else. We're trying to move forward. But once we've given a space for the emotions to be talked about and processed, then all of the rude behaviors actually settle down. And 99% of the time, there is no need for a conversation about, you spoke to me rudely about that. But if you need to have that, you can have that later. Like it still can be a conversation.
Not the conversation to have when it's all happening and everyone's all upset. It's that's something that's like a later conversation, is what I'm hearing you
The
say.
later conversation. Yeah.
That makes
Yeah.
sense.
So I think this is really important to talk about because I'll just use an example. Our oldest, 6 months ago, had an experience where we did something that they didn't like in a really big way. and let us know in a very big way how much they didn't like it. And it was hard to listen to because they didn't exactly agree with everything that he was saying.
There was a little truth. There was not
There
a little,
was
but there was some truth in
there's
there,
absolutely
which was hard to
his experience
recognize.
was completely like valid for him.
Yeah.
And so my question is twofold. What do we do you have ideas for what parents can do when they feel defensive? And then also, is separate question, is there ever a time when the unskillfulness of the delivery of the message
By the team.
by the teen to us that we're like, okay, I'm actually this is actually really hard to hear, and maybe I need to set a boundary here. Both of those are my curiosities.
Yeah, and it's a really good question. I'm really glad you're asking it because I think where we let parents down the most is we have these high-level conversations in almost like perfect ideal conditions. But life isn't like that. Yeah. So I'm going to get to your question, but just like giving an example outside of parenting for a minute. So earlier on this year, I went skiing. Okay. And I had a lesson one day where, blue sky and nice, like easy run, right? You learn all these great things. Yeah. Next day, there's a whiteout. I'm on a run I've never been on. I have no idea whether I'm about to go down a black run or not. I cannot see anything. The world is spinning. And I'm just trying to survive, let alone like think about what the ski instructor taught me the day before, okay? That second scenario is what we're dealing with in parenting, right? You can have all of these like tips and scripts and ideas, but I purposely don't teach script for this reason, because a script is a little bit like that ski lesson on the green run on a blue sky day. It's not going to help you in the moment of, oh my goodness. So what you're describing there, Cecilia, is like, it's an oh my goodness. The first place to start is to go, oh, like, geez, parenting is hard. Like, isn't it just so hard what we're having to deal with, the amount that we have to deal with? And you gave the interaction piece there, but there's a context for you of what was happening for you that day. We forget about that. For parents of teenagers, it's really important, right? Because the other thing that's going on, and I promise I am going to get to this, to answering this in a way that's helpful, but the other context is that we're all having our children later. Puberty is happening earlier. That means that there's hormonal things going on in both generations that have never happened at the same time before, which actually undermines our skill and ability to kind of just keep our own, together. But also, we've always known that there's this what we call the middle-aged squeeze, where parents are under in the teenage years. They have the need to care for their children and the need to care for their parents at the same time. But because we're having our children older, that stress pressure, with the stress pressure of teenage mental health, is worse. The squeeze on parents is so much more. Then you add to it sideways pressure. We are under so much more financial stress than we ever have been. We're going through a period in time where community has been eroded and we're parenting on our own. More parents are both having to work in order to pay for essentials like housing and food and schooling and all the therapy they've got to send their kids to sometimes. And because we're slightly older, our friends are going through really like hard health issues, like a friend who has, cancer, or a friend whose marriage is breaking down, because all of these things are now happening at the same time. So it is, I'm saying that it's partly an answer to your question, right? So when I'm in the whiteout and I'm like, I have no idea what's coming next, first of all, zero judgment from me. You do what you need to do in order to get through, in order to get down the mountain. But there's a few key things to kind of hold on to. One is, don't forget how hard it is. You have to show compassion to yourself. I love all of Kristen Neff's research and all of her exercises. It is so important that we don't that we don't just keep soldiering on like everything's just easy. It's not, it's hard. And when we can just be compassionate to ourselves, oh, this is really hard. I really want to yell at my kid. And maybe you do yell back. No worries, we can fix it up later, right? The main thing is kind of keeping a few key things in mind. When I'm on that mountain in the whiteout and I don't know what's coming next, I've got to keep two things in mind. I've got to get down the hill, try not to fall. Yeah, they're kind of my two main things, really.
Yeah.
Ski somehow and get down the mountain. So, what is that for you in parenting? It's try and stay a little bit calm, because in the same on the mountain, if I start panicking and have a panic attack, I'm never going to be able to get down the mountain. Stay calm-ish. Do what you can. Breathing is often the only thing I can do in those situations. Slow things down a bit if you can. Same thing with the mountain. Like in that mountain, my husband and I were together. We stopped. We didn't just keep going because, we're like, we better get out of this whiteout quickly. We stopped. We paused for a minute. That helps in parenting. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. There were sections of the mountain where I'm on the middle of a steep bit. I can't stop. Like sometimes you can't. You just do your best, don't fall. And you do your best to maintain connection in your relationship with your teenager. Then it's more outside of the situation. It's outside of the situation. What I'm saying to you is just be curious about some of those things and those dynamics. Be curious about, like Jason just said, you're like, now it's been a while. I can reflect and go, there was a little bit of truth in there that was a clue for me with what to do next. Yeah. And I think that that's really the main principle when they're yelling at you and they're being rude and everything else. You can defend yourself, but try and keep communication open a little bit, because sometimes they give you a little bit of a clue of what to do next once you're out of that horrible whiteout parenting situation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So your needs and your feelings, they matter, and there's definitely a timing for a conversation where you say, I don't like being spoken to like that. That really hurts. Sometimes that's actually even in the interaction. If you keep that general principle of what do I do to open up the communication, slow things down for both of us, get down the metaphorical mountain, and then work out what the next step is. I think that's what I have. And I really do think that a big part of that is that just acknowledging how hard it is for both of you in that situation. And when we do that, there's something that kind of shifts into first principles that's helpful. What's not helpful is when we shift into our past experiences as our default mode. So often when we're in really stressful parenting moments, we want to default to our experiences of what did my parents do when I behaved this way? Or our brain kindly tries to remind us of every other time that someone in our life has yelled at us and the lessons that we had to learn in that relationship. Particularly if you have a male teenager, and as a mother, sometimes you might be like, well, I need to assert my boundaries and protection. And some of that's coming from outside of some of those signals are coming actually from outside of your relationship with your teenager. And it's good to have some time outside of the relation, outside of those moments of chaos, to really reflect on that and go, okay, what are my key things? Keep communication open, keep relationship as good as I can, be kind to myself, be kind to them, and slow it down.
And
Yeah.
circle back around later
Yeah.
Circle back around later. Yeah.
to
You don't have
try
to
to,
fix it all in one
yeah.
moment for you or for them. Yeah.
That's asking a lot when we're all fired up, especially, like when we're in the emotional part of our brain trying to just survive it, survive that whiteout, when our brain's not
Yeah.
fully functioning in the thinking part of it, that can be really hard. And then being able to come back when we actually have more of a thinking brain and we're cooled down, like everyone, seems like we can get more together. I wanted to go back to something you had said earlier, but did you want to say anything about it? You were talking about connecting with your teen, and I wanted to just go back just to it for a moment to that, because it's a frequent question we get, and I hear other parents talking about, And I liked a lot of what you said there. It's really nice. And meeting them where they are, having showing curiosity, even when the stuff's like not interesting or mundane. I think, and I liked what you also said there, that like you do that in other relationships, right? Like I'm sure Cecilia just sort of shows interest in some of my whatever my latest thing is that I'm working on that I think is really exciting, and she's like, yeah, oh, tell me more, and it's, she's probably like waiting until it gets to the
Yes, I do that.
good part.
But we also, I wanted to say, we also expect our kids to show interest in the things that we're excited about. We have a total double standard, and yet we
true.
expect that anyway, that they're only going to share with us things that are interesting to us anyway.
As
So sorry.
you were saying it, it just reminded me of something that I had heard of, being like a house plant and just being out and available. And like, and so it's one of the things that I had done is like, there's stuff I would normally do somewhere else, maybe, but maybe I'll sit in the living room and do my reading or whatever, and make myself look available and also be willing to be interrupted. That's my big deal. Like I may actually be out there doing something that I need to be doing, and then if I get interrupted, I'm all like, I don't want to be interrupted, but I'm that is what I want. I want them to connect with me and have that opportunity. And I'd found some luck with that, being a house plant out in the living room.
Yes. Yeah, one of the best interventions that I've had w working with families is I say to them, I say to the parents, just put your laptop on the kitchen bench at some point in time, they've got to eat. Because we know that teenagers have a voracious appetite. I said, all I want you to do, put your laptop on the kitchen table, work there, and when they come out, say nothing. And all of a sudden the dynamic shifts. Be a house plant.
I like that. I like it. And I like something interesting you said about that with like the laptop versus my phone or my like a mobile device. Like there's something, I don't know if this is true. I'm just making this up, but like I wonder if there's a communication, like you said, speak teenager kind of. And there's almost like when I have a mobile device up, that's a different message than when I'm sitting in front of a computer. And I wonder if a computer looks more inviting, possibly, or I'm more willing to be interrupted versus being on a phone and doing something on a mobile device, which maybe is something that signals more like this is my time and I don't want to be interrupted. I don't know. That's just as you were saying that, I was just was wondering about that because I have noticed meeting our teens where they are, sometimes texting them has really worked well because that's kind of where they were at. And we've worked on things via text rather than try to, talk it through at the moment. And we eventually get around to the talking piece. But I really liked that, being trying to talk teenager or be teenager a little bit. So if you had anything else, any other words of wisdom there, because I liked a lot of that what you were just talking about. I was making notes on that
Yeah,
one.
I'm really good at talking teenager and using those like slang words appropriately in conversations with them. They will
Right. I know what skippity is, not at all. Like, I don't. We have to be so yeah, like we have to be really authentic too, like we can't just pretend. But one of the things, the reason why the houseplant idea or the sitting in the kitchen works is because when you're trying to be a really good parent, we can get into this pursuer distancer kind of relationship pattern where we're leaning in too much and that makes them kind of want to run away. And when you're in the house and kind of available in times where they're coming out of their room, that's going to give you more of an opportunity to interact with them. But what we really have to watch out for, particularly with, this audience who watch webinars and attend summits, is that a lot of the information that we hear as parents is quite anxiety provoking, and we want the action step, and we want to get in there, and we want to fix. We're ready to go, and we've got all these new skills, and sometimes we can accidentally create that dynamic. So sometimes doing less is more. Sometimes actually, where I get movement with families is actually when they break script and they finally lose it at their kid. Rather than just being that kind, caring, gentle all the time, because it's like now I'm relating to authenticity, and I like authenticity. We all like authenticity. Teenagers particularly do not like inauthenticity, and they pick it really quickly.
Yeah, they seem to have a
Yeah.
really good inauthenticity detector. It's like I think I can hide stuff, but or they come out of the room and I'm like, oh, here's my chance. And I get overly eager and I'm like, yeah. So let's talk. This is the time we're gonna talk. What are you interested in? What are you doing? Like that's
I know.
I
They're
have to
like,
do what?
cringe, get away from me. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I love this. Okay, I have one more, at least one more question. Because I could talk about this all day. But I wanted to ask about what you tell parents to do instead of giving their teen advice. Because I know certainly
Oh,
the
yeah.
parents that we work with, sometimes me, like I want to give my teens advice. I want to educate them. And that's usually not what they want and usually doesn't produce the results that I want. So what are good alternatives?
Because you're kind of getting to the end. You're like,
Yeah.
oh, here's my last chance, right? Like they're getting older. This is like, I
Yeah.
really got to
You're like,
get
I've
this
got
stuff
so
in.
many things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, like, and our job as parents is to teach. Okay. But let's just kind of rewind and think about how kids and all of us actually learn. Yeah. We easily fall into the pattern of, I know all the answers, let's go tell you. But let's imagine that your kid actually had their math homework in front of you. We've mastered this as parents, I believe. When your child comes to you and goes, I can't do my math, do you say to them, it's okay, here's the answer. You do this, 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 and there's the answer. We do not. We say things like, well, what have you tried already? Show me you're working out. And they're like, oh, I don't know how to do it. What did the teacher teach you? What other resources do you have? Do you have a textbook? How could we work this out? And when they do that, they either figure it out with the questions that we've asked, or they look at it and go, I have no idea. Please show me how to do it. If we follow those same principles with our kids, then we are truly teaching them. So what I teach is coaching conversations, and other ways of talking about it is collaborative problem solving or motivational interviewing. But I like that the idea of coaching conversations, because it kind of ties into like this math coach idea, right? So what that looks like practically is, if your kid comes home and goes, oh, like, I think that, I think that Julie's spreading rumors about me, and I'm just her puppet master, and now she's friends with this person, and I don't, I have no friends. Now, that brings up a lot of anxiety as a parent, and your brain's going to be going, oh, how can I fix it? How can I fix it? How can I fix it? Well, first of all, we can't, because we're not there. Second of all, if you jump in with an answer right now, you're going to be wrong, because you know nothing. We literally, as parents, do not have the whole picture, so we will be getting there. So, like, we will be getting the answers wrong, and then they'll be like, "You don't understand. You can't help me fix this." So, what we do instead is we shift into a coaching mode, and we start with the first question, same as the math. Tell me all about it. Tell me about the problem. Tell me all the things. Not so that we're collecting the investigative evidence to figure out the answer for them. It's so that their brain can start to go, "Oh," and we just ask curious questions. Oh. Like, so yeah, it sounds like you're really worried that people are talking behind your back and someone's taking a friend. Oh, I can, but if that was happening to me, I'd be feeling really like stressed out about it, and not like, how are you feeling about it? And they might go, oh, I don't want to talk about my feelings. See you later. And you just let them go. If they do that at that point, let them go. Let them calm down. You don't have to chase them, you don't have to fix it. You might have just released in that moment where they're like, yeah, I'm really upset. I need to go and have a cry in my room on my own without you. That's helpful emotion processing, right? Just let them go through their process. We don't have to chase them. But let's say they're kind of open to more conversation and we're asking curious questions. Oh, like, what happened there? But it's got to be really with a curious tone, not the detective investigating, because they'll pick that up. Listen, 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 listen a lot. Then you start to ask just gentle prompting questions that will come naturally to you. You don't need my script, actually. Like, when you're just genuinely curious about what's going on and you believe that your kid can find a way through this, you genuinely will come up with curious questions. And 90% of the time, when they get to the point where they either get to a point where they've figured out what their next step is, where they're like, actually, I've already just decided that I'm going to sit with so and so tomorrow. Or they might be like, I've decided I'm homeschooling, which is fun when they decide that. But then you can have curious conversations. That's interesting that you come up with that. I can see why you might have. let's talk about it some more. Like, you open up the conversation, you don't jump in with, no, that's a dumb idea, because you can't avoid friendship problems forever, which is what we want to do. That's solving their math homework. We just slow it down. Yeah, we slow it down. You're in the whiteout. Let's just open it up. We can ask more conversations and ask more questions. And often when we ask those questions, they start to go, oh, I don't know. Maybe I'll give it one more day and see how things go. Or so they might kind of resolve to what you would say to them anyway, which is, yeah, this is really tough. Let's just take one day at a time. They get there. Or they look at you and go, I am so stuck. Please help me. And it's gold when they do that, particularly around devices. These conversations work quite well around devices. We jump really quickly to, they need boundaries, they consequence. I mean, I'm not the tech expert. I don't know. I don't know the technology to do this, and I don't have the time to get a tech degree to get around it, right? But these conversations work quite well, because when you're openly curious about what their struggles with getting off their device before bedtime are, sometimes they do turn around and go, do you have any ideas? So I teach coaching conversations. But also, if you think about the other way that children learn from us, all of us learn from what we see. And so focusing a lot more on, if you're trying to change your children's bedtime or their device use or those things, change your own first. Talk to them about your change. My daughter has put device limits on my phone. It's really helpful. And I
Well,
don't think that's bad parenting, because I believe that true parenting, the true definition of discipline, means to teach. And she is learning from me how hard it is to change your addiction to this. I mean, am I addicted or not? I mean, I don't want to get into the words of that, but I struggle sometimes to get off my emails. I struggle sometimes to look at my kids. I check at times that I shouldn't, you know. Just because mine is legitimate, because I'm checking work emails, doesn't make it better. So I don't see that I'm losing my power or my authority or any of those things by collaboratively working with my children to model behavior change. And yeah, frankly, lecturing, it never works. We never liked it as kids either.
no.
But it's so easy to fall into that trap. And the thing that drives that, this is the parenting, the real world stuff. The thing that drives that is our anxiety. When
For
we are
sure.
feeling anxious and the stakes are feeling high, and we've just seen a social media post about how terrible, how mobile phones are destroying all our brain matter, we want to run straight to their bedroom and have the coaching conversation right then and there. And we are not patient with them. And then we start to throw in all these suggestions that we've just seen in that 5-point post on Instagram. And the irony of the fact is that we're using social media to then try and fix a social media problem is hilarious, but that's okay. But we've got to be aware of these dynamics around things. It's the emotional dynamics behind things that is where the real work needs to happen, rather than the, this is your script, these are your words. Yeah.
I like that a lot. I appreciate pointing out, like, just having the words doesn't really solve it. Just having a script doesn't really solve the issue. And in fact, what's nice is if we're able to understand a lot of what you've talked about here, the words just come out, like the right words. Like, you know the words, you know what to say. And that makes it even easier, I would say, for a parent, than rather having to remember, like, oh, what is it I'm supposed to say right now? Like, where's that thing I wrote down, like that. So I appreciate that. Here, as we're wrapping up here, do you have any final words or anything you want to leave folks with here in the conference?
Yeah, so I think, we've talked about a lot of things here today, but I think the key thing, if you walk away with nothing else, is to remember that your relationship with your teenager is the key to their resilience, whether it's their emotional and mental health resilience or their resilience for doing hard things. That relationship is key, and it's really important that we don't fully tolerate disconnection, but we seek to move forward in real, authentic communication with our kids. Because we do have a generation of teenagers that need a lot of help and support with their emotions. And so that true, authentic connection is the key thing that we need to be focusing on when we're thinking about teenage resilience.
That's great. I can appreciate that connection just with human beings as well as with our teenagers. How can people find out more about you've had some great stuff here. Like we've got, I feel like we have so much that we could just continue to talk about. It's like we just skimmed to the surface here, but really some great stuff. How could people find out more about what you have and what kind of work you do?
Yeah, so I have a really popular free guide for parents. I've had about 30,000 parents read this guide. It's about how to connect with your teen when they're rolling their eyes, moody, refusing, or slamming their doors. And it goes through some of the things that we've talked about today, but also some of the things of like, how do we do this in the real world of parenting? That is really where my heart is the real world of parenting isn't a blank schedule where parents aren't working and they have heaps of time for long extended coaching conversations. The real world of parenting is I'm losing my mind and then my kid's having a meltdown and what am I meant to do right now? So yeah, so that there's that guide that parents can access, which I'd love to share with your audience too.
Great. We'll get the link from you and we'll put that in the speaker notes. Appreciate you offering that free guide for folks. And if it's anything like what this interview has been like, it's something that's going to be really valuable, full of gold. So thanks for that. And as always, it's good talking to you, Kirsten. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us here. And let's talk again sometime in the near future.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Hi.